Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us. My name is Mike Gibb. I run accountsrecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on artificial intelligence, myths, marketing, pitfalls, and positives. Terms like artificial intelligence and machine learning are being thrown around a lot today in the credit collection industry. In this webinar, which is being sponsored by Revenly, we've got Greg Allen from Parity here to share actionable information to help companies learn more about this important topic and make informed decisions. The industry is heading toward a full embrace of adopting more technology to help improve contact and collection rates. Everyone in the industry can benefit from knowing more about this important topic and how it will be reshaping the collections industry. As I mentioned, this webinar is being generously sponsored by Revenly. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speaker. Greg Allen is the founder and chief executive officer of Parity, a company that was founded on the idea that advanced technology could solve the consumer debt crisis for everyone, lenders, collectors, and individuals who are repaying debt. With modern artificial intelligence, rapid machine learning, and new products launching daily, Parity helps people recover. Greg founded Parity in 2017 after working at a startup data and analytics company. He studied applied mathematics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and finance and applied mathematics at the University of Maryland. The format for today's webinar will be a presentation from Greg. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the presentation is ongoing and when it has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that, let me bring in Greg Allen to begin his presentation. Greg, you ready?
I am.
Excellent. It's all yours.
Great. Well, thanks for that introduction. I really appreciate it. Although we are not launching products every day. I wish we were.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Absolutely. I'm excited to kind of talk about artificial intelligence, the myths, marketing, pitfalls, and positives. And I appreciate everyone who signed up and is here to listen to me talk. This is my first webinar, so please bear with me, I'm excited about this topic. It's something I'm passionate about. It's something that I've devoted most of my life to, so I love every opportunity I have to talk about it. I think, I always find it's better to start off with, what is AI? There's so much ambiguity. The term is thrown around so often and misused that it helps to break it down into two categories. I break it down into weak versus strong AI or narrow versus general AI. Both are the same breakdown. When talking about a general AI, that's more the AI of science fiction. It's sentient robots and all-knowing beings that are powered by computers. It doesn't exist, and it's actually still up for debate whether or not we can ever reach a general AI or a strong AI. And then you have weak or narrow AI, which is predominantly focused around the area of machine learning. You see it in some of your IVRs. It involves natural language processing. It involves, you see it when you're, if you use Gmail and you're typing a new email and they're recommending what to say in that email. It's a sentiment analysis. It's modeling tools. It's fraud detection, anti-money laundering type stuff. And I think it's important to separate those two things. And keep the focus on weak or narrow AI, which is what I'll mainly be talking about today, because it's what's applicable. It's more controllable. It's something that can drive immediate value if implemented correctly. It's what we hope to use to reach an artificial intelligence. It is where the focus is going to be today. A little background where AI began. Or at least where it was popularized at a conference at Dartmouth in 1956. So you can see it's been around for a while. and it's promised a lot of things, but it's really let down over the past decades quite often. There have been these hype periods where people were so confident, or scientists were so confident, that AI was going to revolutionize everything, and then it didn't, and it went under the radar for a while, and then it would pop back up again, and then sink down. In the 1990s, IBM had a machine called Deep Blue, or a program called Deep Blue, that beat the grandmaster in chess, and everybody thought now is the time where AI is going to really revolutionize everything, but it didn't really end up doing too much. So why now? Why is this happening again now? And why am I excited about it? Why is everybody so much more excited about it than they've ever been? And it's because of a few different reasons. One, the type of processing power that we have available now. There are these things called graphical and tensor processing units that allow machines to just analyze a lot more data more quickly and implement algorithms that could only be theorized on whiteboards and blackboards, but never actually implemented. It's also the kind of coming together of cloud technology. I mean, from my apartment, I can run 10,000 different computers doing an analysis across a huge data set. That kind of computing power did not exist in the way that it did 10 years ago. And the massive amounts of data that are available now, particularly from social networks, companies like Google, Amazon, and all of our phones. I mean, all of this data that is available now makes machine learning and AI possible and actually usable. Financial services, as far as investments are concerned, in AI, in machine learning, who is pioneering it? It's financial services, and it's time for this to make its way into collections. It already has started to, and I'm starting to see a huge boom. And what can it do? There are a number of different possibilities and capabilities, and depending on how it's implemented. But I've highlighted a few here and just some of the data that we've seen. It really can make you smarter and more efficient. I mean, that's what the purpose is for this technology. Decreasing calls, the amount of call attempts by 24%. And that can be lifted even higher if you're implementing a digital strategy along with your machine learning or artificial intelligence, strategy. And it just increases the contact rates immensely. Here it says 38%. It's because it's more intelligent. It's not only helping you understand who to contact with some score, but it's also saying, this is the time period where you should be contacting this individual. This individual maybe just, got a job or has changed locations, or something's changed about this person. Or, any amount that there's so much data out there that's not being utilized, and it can really provide a lot of value. It also creates this feedback loop if implemented correctly. If you have a machine learning driven strategy that's dictating kind of accounts that you should be working, and then also tracking what's happening when those accounts are contacting, and what payments are received, what promises are received, what kind of language is being spoken, what method of communication you're using, and you can find a way to sync that back to the beginning, you create this feedback loop that the algorithm and your organization as a whole can actually learn from. So, it's a dynamic strategy that is self-fulfilling and can also, you just doing your normal operations will help you move further along as long as you have your data organized correctly and you're implementing this. But it can really do a lot. This concept of recommendation engines, why aren't you know, why can't we deliver these recommendations directly to our terminals, to the collectors, you know, at the right time? And beyond that, why aren't these integrated with portals, payment portals, to go beyond just, you know, a specified payment amount, creating individualized experiences? These are tactics that are used in marketing all the time. These are things that people are used to while dealing with their financial institutions before they're in collections. They want user-friendly interfaces. They want messaging that speaks to them. They want, you know, these are the things that take a really crummy situation and make it a little bit better. You know, these, the technology that we have can enable us to stream in, you know, job placement tools right into a portal, you know, from Indeed.com's API, or, you know, pre-qualifying secured credit cards to help people rebuild their credit, going beyond just paying down their debt, offering insurance, setting up bank accounts. All of these different things can be utilized. The potential is huge. So if there is so much potential here, and this is all great and AI is all amazing and everything, why is there so much confusion? Why do I sometimes find myself questioning what the heck AI is? And I think it's due to a few reasons that I'll highlight and not touch on. I'm sure everybody has their own opinions on why this is so. I think to start, you know, it has to do with, you know, an AI system or a machine learning algorithm can be incredibly, it is pretty complex when you dig down into it and what and how it's designed, how it's constructed, how it's implemented, how it's, you know, how it learns, all of these different things. So because of that complexity and the limited, you know, amount of professionals that really understand it, it's really easy to just make a claim and nobody will really be able to challenge it. You know, if I say that my AI could solve all your problems, or even my AI can just look through your data and do anything you want, it's really hard to say, no, it can't, you know, unless you actually spend the time implementing this and then find out the hard way that it's not true. And I think that technology companies or AI practitioners or anybody needs to do a better job of clarifying what the limits are, what the potential is, you know, and be realistic about what we can accomplish. You know, we can't just drop our technology into an organization and expect it to change everything. It needs specific tasks. It needs to be targeted. And I'll kind of dive into that as well a little bit further into this. Hollywood helps contribute to some of this confusion, and does not really help the fact that there's this idea of an AI apocalypse that could potentially come about. I'm here to say that the AI apocalypse is not happening. It's most likely not going to happen, at least anytime in the next, you know, century, if ever. I just don't see how that's possible. So there's definitely no need to worry about that. Marketing agencies need to personify machine learning and AI, the language we use, neural networks, all of these things that make it sound like a human brain. And because it is those names kind of allow for the dream that it can act like a human and do more things than it actually can. I think that causes a lot of problems, and I wish we could come up with better names, but then again, this is where we are. That brings me to kind of our next question. You know, can AI think on its own? It can give that impression that it's thinking on its own, but it's really not. So I guess it's a yes and no. You know, as a data scientist, we are really creating a very controlled environment for this algorithm to operate, where, you know, the data is prepared, the problem is identified, that the proper data sets are then prepared within the data. And all of these updates, all of these kind of learnings need to be managed. The software that it's integrated with needs to be, you know, hosted, needs to be checked, needs to be tweaked. And so yes and no. Does AI...
Greg, if I could just, I'm sorry, if I could just interrupt for one quick second. I just want to pause the presentation. Just to give you a second to sort of catch up. But I also want to invite Josh Allen from Revenly as the sponsor of today's webinar to say a few words. Josh?
Hey, thanks. My name is Joshua Allen, CEO, co-founder of Revenly. No relation to Greg over there, but thanks, Greg and Parity, for jumping on and doing this. Revenly is a consumer-focused platform that's built to meet the demands of today's payer. And essentially, it can increase a collection agency's self-serve revenue 5 to 25% just based strictly on the debtor experience that the platform provides. It's digital first. And it has a plug-and-go integration with Parity in order to provide a real-time data exchange. So you can also use all of their fun features as well. So thanks, Michael. Throw it back to you.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, Josh. Appreciate the words. Appreciate Revenly's sponsorship of today's webinar. Greg, we'll hand it off back to you to continue your presentation. Thanks.
Sure. Do you think maybe it makes sense to take a question or two just in case, since we're at a break? I don't want to just keep talking.
Sure.
If people have any questions as to what I've said so far. If not, I'll just keep going.
There's nothing in the queue yet, but I will use this as a reminder if anybody has a question for Greg to type it into your web, the Q&A button, or hit the Q&A button and type it into the Zoom control panel and we'll get it asked of him. I did have a question just to sort of kind of get the ball rolling maybe. You know, if I'm at a collection agency and I'm watching this and I've heard everything about AI and I'm looking to try and figure out how it kind of sort of applies or fits into my business, you know, how would you advise a collection agency to start looking at deploying AI in their office? You know, what would be sort of the equivalent of the low-hanging fruit, I guess?
Sure. You know, I always say, you know, when getting started, you start with the data, and you try to incorporate an account scoring model that's driven by machine learning and based on your own company's kind of actions. You also use this kind of process to, you know, create a statistical model alongside of that to understand what data points you have and what are contributing to your success. And maybe you are spending resources in areas where you shouldn't be, or maybe you're spending, money on certain accounts or you should be directing that money elsewhere. So I say starting with kind of a, you know, basic machine learning driven scoring model is the start. And then you build upon that. From there, you start to learn about timeframes. And from there, you work in, you know, language, account allocation, and you start integrating, you know, but you need to start somewhere and build upon them, because all of these different machine learning models should work together and bring you to the point of automation. But that doesn't happen overnight.
Excellent. Thank you. There's nothing in the queue right now, so we'll invite you to continue with your presentation and remind everybody to type your questions in, and we'll get to them as Greg's continuing with his presentation today.
Great. So I think I touched on, you know, whether or not AI thinks like a human. Although there are scientists mapping the human brain now and how kind of your neurons firing correlate to words or movements, we're still a little ways away from it actually being like really usable in at least business. And I think we're pretty far away from really having an AI that thinks like a human does. Does it learn? Like I said, I touched on that. I put together a little kind of example of kind of a controlled environment for how an AI can learn or a machine learning model can learn. One is, you know, you set a certain number of parameters in a machine learning model. You give whether it's you give numerical values to, well, or maybe qualitative descriptions, and then that model tries to predict outcomes and adjusts those parameters as it learns. Another example is within medical diagnosis. A machine learning algorithm could ingest a lot of different scans, radiology scans that have been associated with an illness, whether it be a cancer diagnosis or a tumor or something along those lines, and from there on be able to predict with extreme accuracy new scans and, you know, the likeliness of it, of a tumor being cancerous. I think, you know, this idea of learning is also an area where we need to be careful when implementing artificial intelligence in a regulated industry. And that's because there are two different kinds of ways. There are more than two, but for the sake of argument, there are something called supervised machine learning and unsupervised machine learning. And unsupervised machine learning can be very dangerous. It's where you run into situations where, you know, you have a racist bot tweeting on the internet, or, you know, Google AI classifying certain gorillas as black people. It can be very problematic in a regulated industry, but it does provide an example of how, you know, things can learn. So take the game of Snake, for example. You can train an algorithm to learn how to play. It's a very common example used. I use a bunch of different neural networks here, 50 of them. I set kind of a percentage of success rates for how many of them I'm going to select after each iteration. I give a value to a score to when the snake eats a food successfully. I give it a 10. I give it a value, a score for when it moves towards the food. I'll give it a 1. And I give it a negative value for when it goes away from the food, because I need to control the situation here. If I don't set these parameters just right, the snake won't learn at all. It'll just kind of go in circles. And, you know, it will make a lot of mistakes. And a lot of times we can't afford to make so many mistakes, especially when dealing with consumers. But at the same time, you know, this is a little further along. You'll see generation 27 up here. It can be very effective. It can be very effective if it's done and implemented properly. But this needs to be controlled and watched and really treated with respect. Because if it's not, you'll have a situation where, you know, a machine is repeatedly contacting one person over and over again because it has a high value payment, or something that suggests a language that is inappropriate to use because it may have seen some kind of indicator that went along with that in the past or somewhere else on social media. Is machine learning AI? It's a common question that I'm asked pretty often. And I guess the formal definition is it's a subset of AI, a technique for reaching kind of something AI. Simply, I like to say that, you know, machine learning plus an automated interaction gives you artificial intelligence. Whether you have a machine learning model that's suggesting language to put in an email, then automating that, then having a system take that suggestion and actually contacting a person via email, that is when you've reached, in my opinion, some level of artificial intelligence. you know, out of the box AI. I like to just touch on this because it's important to understand that there is really no such thing, and it's, you know, just dropping something into your system and thinking it's go into your company and thinking it's going to, you know, provide value is a dangerous notion. A lot of the benefits are only realized when your data is properly organized and it's fed into some kind of system that's analyzing it and then starting to make predictions. And that usually takes time. So it's a step-by-step process. That doesn't mean that you need to dedicate all of your resources all at once to doing this. And then while implementing, there's nothing that can be gained. If you take it in a step-by-step approach, you can see incremental gains over your implementation period, and it will just get better over time. No data, no AI. It's not entirely true, but for our purposes, I think it serves well that a huge part of machine learning and utilizing machine learning is data. Data is the, you know, is the building block for a machine learning algorithm. It's what it learns from. It's how it gets trained. It's how your model is built, and what allows you to learn. So, you know, organizing your company's data can sometimes be a very tough thing to do, but it's worth the investment, because that is how you can really leverage technology the greatest. Massive amounts of data for AI. I think something that a lot of us are working towards is to minimize the amount of data necessary to really achieve the maximum benefits from machine learning. There's this concept of synthetic data, where you can take a small amount of data and then create versions of that data so that you don't need huge amounts. We played with it internally. I think it still has some work to be done. There's benefit to using something synthetic data, but it still needs some tweaking. Another important topic is algorithmic bias and within the machine learning model, within an AI. It's something that can't be kind of ignored. And it's a really important topic, because any technology vendor, any organization that's implementing any machine learning needs to be aware of this and needs to understand how to combat it. There's natural bias in a data, most and especially in this industry. I've seen slightly more. The causes of it can be a number of different things, but most predominantly are two: the historical human bias, actions taken historically that have been realized within your data, and incomplete or unrepresentative training data. If you have data that leaves out a particular group of people, or you will start to see a natural bias occur. So that's kind of, there's this also this concept of a black box that goes side by side with what we're talking about. And any algorithm or any company that claims that their solution is the black box, or they cannot reveal their secret sauce, I would definitely steer clear from, because there's no way for you to do your own internal checks if that's the case. So all of this being said, is it possible to explain what's going on? Is it possible to prevent against bias, or at least have checks in place to manage this risk? And it's absolutely true. It's absolutely possible. Anyone who's on the forefront of machine learning AI is working on this. There are great tools out currently. One's called Shapley Additive Explanations. And it produces kind of somewhat user-friendly plots such as this for understanding the weight that any given data point has on a prediction. It has a few different ways of laying it out. This is one that I like, but there are a number of different ways to kind of visualize this and understand what's going on within your machine learning models. There's also this concept of algorithm audits. When a machine learning model runs and gives a set of predictions for a number of accounts, you can do an analysis to see if there are any clusters of accounts that are residing within a certain zip code or something. So say, when I build a model, I take out the zip code from my data, I run the model, I score the accounts, then I filter back in the zip codes and I see if I have any cluster of scores within one particular zip code, and then I break down the demographics of that zip code and see what's going on. What is happening here? Am I at risk? Is my company at risk? Am I targeting any areas, any individuals? No, I'm good. All right, let's move forward. Yes, I am. All right, let's randomize this. Let's rerun the algorithm and let's go forward. So, algorithm audits are it's a topic of concern amongst regulators. I actively engage with different regulators to come up with standards for these type of situations, because it's important that we engage with regulatory bodies and understand how we can create guidelines and have the input from different types of peoples who have different concerns, whether it's how do I optimally model and use the patterns in this data? Does this represent the underlying reality of the world? Is this data outdated? Does this actually depict the population I'm looking at? Need insights from sociologists, from data scientists. Is this transparent, from regulators? So there need to be inputs from, multiple disciplines and, standards created. Until then, it's up to kind of us to do that ourselves. It's up to me to do that. It's up to me to engage. It's up for anybody who is using machine learning models to engage, because this is the future. I mean, there's so much benefit that can come from this. So we want to make sure that we are addressing it properly. The auditor's task. It's bringing together, the idea that this is, can be controlled at the governmental level, and also it's grounded has a scientific basis to it. I think it's the coming together of both of those things that will make this possible. As AI, moves from out of, research and becomes, comes accepted into industries, it's important that we take these issues and address them head on and have a plan. And I know I have a plan and my colleagues have plans, and I think we are positioned very well for this technology. I think that there is active participation between industry, between government, and everybody sees the benefit and everybody wants to address these issues. So, there's not as much fear around this technology as there was before, for example, email was concerned when it first came around, or maybe Bitcoin. Until we have these standards, like I said, it's up to anyone that is utilizing this technology to self-audit. There's part of these gains that can come from this technology affect our economy, and how much it can help economies grow, how much it can help our businesses grow. And it's not going to replace our jobs. It's not going to replace jobs. It's going to shift them. And the fact is, if we can automate know, a lot of the processes within debt collection, it's a better benefit to our overall economy, not just individual companies. Yeah, I think that's all I really have.
Okay. Excellent. Great presentation. Really appreciate the information. I have a few questions to kind of keep the ball rolling as a reminder, and we'll remind everybody, if you have a question for Greg, now's probably your best time to type it into the Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll ask it before we wrap up. With everything that you discussed today, is it something that, you know, for lack of a better term, a layman or sort of an everyday person can they sort of get into this, or is this something that you really kind of need someone with a background in this type of technology or applied mathematics to really sort of maximize what benefits may be obtained from it?
No, definitely not. I think that just, you know, some basic Google searches and some basic reading, having an understanding of what you need to get started is really a great place to begin. Just understanding the importance of data, understanding what training data is, what it's being used for, and having a goal as to what you want to achieve is really how you get started. You know, will you be designing the algorithms? No, I mean, probably not. But will you be able to implement it in your company? Absolutely.
So if I have my fictional collection agency, I've done those Google searches. Do I next sort of take a look at my office and my operation and say, okay, what am I doing manually that probably could be done, what am I doing manually that I could instead turn around and automate?
I think that's too big of a question.
Okay.
You know, I think that's like, automation is your kind of destination, but there are a bunch of stops along the way that you need to get to before you reach automation. So I think the first question that you ask yourself is, what data do I have? Where is it? You know, all right, I have this data, I know where it is. Can I start organizing it so I can feed it into a model? You know, because it's once you can't reach those levels of automation until your data is organized. You may be able to drop in a solution that can automate some of your operations, but will it reach you? Will it help you survive the evolution of technology? Absolutely not. Will it help, you know, really drastically increase your margins? No. You need to be a fully intelligent enterprise to see those maximum gains. And that starts with organizing your data.
Right. We did get a question in from the audience. If I want to find the best time to call, how can I use AI to achieve it? Where do I start?
Right. So in order to achieve that, you need to, it obviously starts with your data, like I said, and you want to analyze. First, you'll train a model that's based off of, if you have your origination date, your charge-off date, and your historically paid dates. You organize all your paid dates with your charge-off dates, with your origination dates, if you have them, and you start to see time intervals for periods of time where people are paying you back, you know, starting at, you know, the blocks of 90 days, going down to blocks of 60 every 30, then you go down to the week from there and you start increasing the accuracy of your models. Then once you start to have a more narrow scope of these timelines, you want to start to enrich that with more data, from whether that be from, you know, social media, whether it be wherever you can get it. Maybe you've got partnerships with app developers for certain phone data, and you can start to get a better idea of, you know, what time is the most effective time, you know? So it's not just, you know, the day of the week or the month or the year, it's the time of day, you know, correlated with the month that they're most likely going to be able to pay, or the week that they're most likely going to be able to pay. Now you can get that data, you know, there are data sources, there are vendors out there that understand working hours of certain communities, there are, you know, working data sets that have mapped, or companies that have mapped working hours, specific job titles, and that's kind of how you can achieve that time of day, or eventually, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, collection agencies have tons of data, you know, tons of it, I'm sure, from all the, you know, their calling results, their campaigns, their notes, their payment histories. Is it, you know, in your experience, is this something that agencies are able to sort of wrap their arms around all of this data, or is it sort of all kind of segregated and siloed and sort of really difficult to kind of start to try and analyze?
It's definitely a lot, and some of it is segregated, unfortunately, due to you know, maybe your telephony data is with your dialing vendor, and your account data is in your CRM, and maybe you have another data with your cross payment processor, and you know, then trying to pull that all together, you know, it's a big undertaking, especially if you don't have, you know, a big data engineer, or you don't have someone that's used to, you know, dumping things into a database and constructing an API around it. It can be a challenge. And I think, you know, when determining, you know, what you want to do, you need to do some sort of a cost analysis around, does this make sense for me to bring on a team to do that, to hire a consulting company, or to work with a vendor that streamlines data as part of their everyday activities?
Okay. We did get a question that came in, and I'm not sure if you know this, but where can we obtain behavioral data about consumers? Is that something you can help out with?
I think I did touch on that specific vendors. I'd rather not talk about specific vendors.
Sure. Okay.
I think
but the behavioral data is out there. No.
Yeah, there's, I mean, you could see, I mean, the census data, the U.S. Census Bureau does collect some behavioral data. It's pretty limited. If you can do scraping on publicly available social media, that's obviously where you can find behavioral data. You can take behavioral, well, more importantly, I should have mentioned this. I mean, you can find behavioral data in your own call transcripts. That is great. That's a great data set. For understanding behavioral data. That's what I would leverage actually first.
Okay. Another question that came in, what do you see as a future state, say 3 to 5 years down the road? What will AI be doing in the future that it's not doing today? Will the need for human agents be dramatically reduced?
I do, in 3 to 5 years, I do see more automation within this space, where there would be a decrease in the number of agents necessary to run a call center. I think that the quality of the agents, though, will go up, and more individualized experience will be delivered to consumers through the technology, where, you know, some of the things I touched on, where, you know, these consumers are getting individualized payment plans and other services are being streamlined into them, maybe from the actual client that you're servicing is redistributing products and help, and you're working with your clients to rehabilitate these customers. I think that the technology will propel the industry to potentially a rebranding as to you know, where people will actually notice what's actually going on in collections, where collectors and agencies are actually helping people in a really crappy situation a lot of the times. I think that will come to light through the use of technology as well.
I can just envision, you know, having to apply the three laws of robotics into collections. Another question. Siloed data has hindered liquidation optimization. While machine learning can greatly enhance, contacts and triggers, how can machine learning improve collector performance at the same rate as improving account level collectability can both perform at the same levels?
Yeah, I think it's not solely about increasing collector, the actual individual collector's performance, but it's distributing the accounts to that collector that they are most relatable to. And I think that is where the real benefit comes in that specific area. When you can match a consumer with a collector that they are more likely to relate to, the data shows they are more likely to be successful in collecting a payment. I think that's a simple answer to that. That makes sense.
Okay. Yep. I know that maybe there's some people who are listening to this and wondering how much is this going to cost me? You know, this sounds expensive. Without getting into specifics, because there's a lot of different variables and different things you've talked about, you know, does it need to be a significant, you know, financial investment that needs to be made, you know, when you start looking or heading down this path?
Yeah, I think it depends a little bit on, you know, the timeline you want. If you want to achieve this over a 12-month period or a 24-month period, you can spread those costs out significantly into some kind of monthly subscription that it becomes very cost effective. If you're looking to drop a whole system into your company, which I once again don't necessarily advise, then it's usually a huge upfront cost. So I do think there's a cost effective way to take the incremental approach into achieving automation, because you will be realizing these gains in the short terms from the different score models, the different work allocation models. And your agents and your company will be training more data as time goes on. So when you have organized everything over that 12-month period, the implementation of the actual front-end software, the front-end technology, becomes a lot easier. And there's no added cost other than what you've been paying on a regular basis. And that's why I always advise taking this incremental approach.
Can I jump in for a question?
Absolutely.
So this is going back a little to what you just said, and two questions ago, the 3 to 5 year one. So I was recently told this by someone, and I guess this is a do you agree or disagree? What they said was, today's AI is tomorrow's software. And basically that's going back to that 3 to 5 years down the road question. Do you agree with kind of a blanket statement like this, that really you're just building that this is building blocks for better systems overall?
Yeah, I mean, I do believe that these are the building blocks for more intelligent systems. And that's the idea of introducing, you know, machine learning services via API, you know, where, you know, ideally these technologies are integrated with CRMs. Or you can build on top of these to create more customized experience instead of these kind of clunky systems that you can't really do much with unless you want to hire a team of developers to rewrite. Did that answer your question, Josh?
It did, and I muted myself with the yes. So yeah, it did. Thank you.
Another question. Where do you see the most success using AI in collections?
It's a tough question. I see it in, I have seen the most success in, let's see. I mean, we're talking specific data points. I would say just the ability to decrease your costs spent on other data vendors and street and leveraging your own data to create more individualized scoring models to have more of a targeted approach to contacting your accounts and only purchasing data on those accounts at the time period where you need it. So it decreases costs and spreads them out. I see a lot of success there. That's a really low hanging fruit from the time being. I think implementing having more ways for consumers to access their own accounts and make payments is also added benefit. And then combining the two really can be a game changer.
Well, that's all. Right now, we've got the questions we have in the queue. I will, you know, offer a final reminder to anybody. If you have a question, this is probably your last chance now to enter it into the Zoom webinar control panel. And we'll ask it of Greg before we wrap up. While we see if anybody has any final questions, Greg, what I'd like to do maybe is give you a chance to share any parting words of wisdom, any takeaways, maybe a chance to talk about something you did get a chance to talk about, but you know, just because you forgot or because the conversation didn't go that way, but just maybe a chance to sort of summarize for the people today, you know, sort of the theme of your presentation.
Sure. I mean, the theme of this presentation was just to kind of clarify certain things around artificial intelligence and machine learning. I think my parting words would be to take it step by step, work with somebody or do it internally to organize your data. Because when your data is organized, leveraging technology is a lot easier. That's what I would say.
Okay, great. Well, Greg, thank you so much for the presentation today. Really appreciate you taking the time to share your insights and your perspective and your expertise with us. This webinar would not have been possible without your participation. Clearly, nobody wanted to listen to me talk for this long about artificial intelligence. It would not have gone as well. I also want to thank Revenly one last time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.revenly.io to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. A recording of this event will be posted to accountsrecovery.net's webinar recordings page in the next day or so, and I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Greg, thank you so much. Great job.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right, everybody. Take care.